You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Wednesday edition. We did not have a show yesterday. I had some medical problems that I needed to get addressed. I'm feeling a little bit better, but I'm still not 100%, and I'm debating whether or not to have a show Thursday. But we'll see. What's in the news? A lot's in the news. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know I've commented upon Donald Trump's repeatedly saying it's communist China that is paying all those tariffs. Now, I have no doubt that the communist Chinese are paying a lot of the tariffs. Why? Because they can do a couple of things. One, they can manipulate the currency to make it undervalued. Number two is they can subsidize, especially the communist firms. In essence, what they're doing is paying the tariffs normally, consumers in the importing country would have to pay. But most of the time, forget China for a minute. If a country puts a tariff on a good, what does that mean? It means, in the United States case, it's the United States citizens that are paying this tax. That's how they work. It's called protectionism, and who are you protecting? Well, you're not protecting the American consumer. You actually increases his taxes. When you impose a tariff, that means he has to pay a higher price for the good or service. You're protecting an industry and the companies in that industry. So I'm never a fan of tariffs. I'm very much a free trader. Now, the only exception is when you have a country that is taking advantage of us in the sense that they're not opening their markets, or they have what's they could be putting, and they are, tariffs on U.S. goods. But the major thing that many companies do is they have what's called non-tariff barriers to trade, which makes selling goods, services, for example, in China, difficult, if not impossible. And they've also been stealing our intellectual property. And the general, and Trump is getting back to this, because for many, many years, communist China did manipulate the currency to keep exports cheap. That's how you get an unfair advantage vis-a-vis other countries, is you devalue your currency. And you do that by printing more and more money. We have all countries today have fiat money, and they just create it. The United States does that. They don't like you to understand that, though. So I'm not trying to confuse you, but Trump is right. Devaluation of your currency, to the extent a country does that, in other words, it's not a market-determined rate for your currency, does give those countries that engage in it an advantage. But what happens? Other countries respond in kind. So it's a short-term advantage. Now, for a while, the communist Chinese weren't doing that. But now they're back to their old ways. And that's a way they can make sure that they don't lose some of their business in the United States. In other words, even though there's a tariff imposed, let's say without a tariff, the price of a TV set is $100. And with the tariff, the price of that TV set is $125. So what could they do? They can undervalue the yuan in this case, or they could subsidize the company that's making this. So in effect, even though after the tariff is imposed, it's still $100. You know, take, for example, you start with $100, the tariff goes to, it's 25%, $125. So instead of the price of that television being $100, it's now $80, and you slap a 25% tariff on that. I hope I'm not losing you, but the point I'm trying to make is Trump is right, but you got to understand that with most goods, including many of the goods that the communist Chinese export to this country, are not subsidized. Are not. So if you impose a tariff on them, who's going to pay for it? Well, it's no longer communist China. It's, yes, the American taxpayer. So what happened today, and it's important, and it's getting a lot of attention, some are saying Trump linked. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he understands that for many goods, for example, TV sets, computers, consumer electronics, gadgets, a whole host of products, they're not going to be subsidized. And we're heading towards Christmas, and it's during third, fourth quarter that you have supply chains. Stores, what do? They stock up on toys, electronics, televisions, smartphones, computers, hoping to sell it in the October, November, December timeframe just before Christmas. So if Donald Trump's puts a tariff on them, and that's what he was saying he was going to do, lo and behold, who pays that tariff? It's the U.S. consumer. I don't think he blinked. I think there's not much to be gained here in terms of negotiations. What we really should focus in on are not these goods, and this is why you usually have a list of goods where the most subsidies are you want to put the tariffs on, and the least subsidies, zero or very little tariffs. So I think Trump made the right decision. It's somewhat surprised people. It didn't surprise me, though, because first Trump was having a problem, and he knew it, that the media wasn't understanding his argument. And initially I said, no. The consumer pays for the tariff. It's a tax. Tariff is a tax. You input a good from any country and it has a tariff on it, that tariff is passed on to the buyer of the good. So instead of, for example, putting a 10% tariff on these goods, he decided we'll leave certain goods off of that list. And that includes laptop computers, cell phones, video games, consoles, clothing, footwear. Think of it when you go to Walmart. A lot of the goods that come from China fall in those categories. Instead of you seeing a price increase of 10%, you won't see it. So that's good for U.S. consumers. Now, once this was announced, what happened? The stock market shot right back up. And this, in a way, could have been anticipated. I know at some point, it's not worth that extra 10%. Now, here's something to keep in mind. It's clear to me that the U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer, together with Trump and Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin, are agreeable for this. But what about next year? What happens if a year from now we're in the same position we are now? In other words, while China's done a lot of talking and it decides to wait for after the election to maybe agree with the Democrats, assuming they would win. And I think Communist China has to think about it, because what will U.S. companies do? You have supply chains. And that's a fancy way to say what countries and what vendors in those countries will supply you the goods that you need to sell in your store, for example. If it looks like the communist Chinese are not negotiating in good faith, then what U.S. companies have to do is consider an alternative source of supply for these goods. And I think that's what many of them are doing. Companies will be leaving China. And China's economy and the problem with their statistics, we have the same problem with U.S. statistics. But government statistics are usually designed to give you, let's say, a more rosier picture of what's going on. I think the communist Chinese economy is suffering. So the question is when and to what extent the communist Chinese will come around and enter into an mutually acceptable trade agreement. And the key has always been that is enforceable. They can either do it with Trump or run the risk thinking that maybe the Democratic candidate will win. Now, in my humble opinion, that's not going to happen. I'm not saying the political race for president won't be close. It will be. But I think Trump will win mainly because of the economy doing very, very well up to now. And the fact that if you look at the Democratic candidates, they're all for this Medicare for all. And the American people, simply the majority of the American people, I'm not saying all the American people, are not going to agree to this. And the reason is they like the health care they have with their employer. Medicare for all would replace all private insurance. It would do away with it. And those are what what I call the Reds, the radical extremist Democrat socialists want. But they never check with their base. And I mean the voter base, not just the Democrats, but the Republicans and independents. Because the majority of people like their health insurance, and they're not going to let you take it away. If that's what you say you're for, they're not going to vote for you. It's not hard to understand. We don't like what you're for. And if I don't like what you're for, I'm not going to vote for you. And I don't think that has gotten across to the Democrats. They think they can lie, and they are lying, not only about Trump, but to the American people as to what they're up to. Well, the American people figure it out. They might be slow, but they're not stupid. But I think the Democratic candidates, the Reds, are stupid because they're running on an agenda that is unacceptable to the American people. And once Trump, and Trump's already doing this, pointing it out, what the Democratic Party is for, all he has to do is tell the truth about what the Democratic Party is for, and he wins. Now, he has to get it a very concise, convincing message on this, and that's why I'm going to, later in the show, play a little bit of his most recent speech, supposedly on energy, but I didn't find much about energy in the speech. It was sort of mislabeled. Anyway, this surprised a lot of people. I would have waited at least a week before doing this, but he decided to do it, bite the bullet now. And that is definitely, I think, the communist Chinese negotiators are receiving that message. The question is, what are they going to do, if anything? The ball is clearly in their court, but Trump has made it very, very clear he can wait them out. And I think he's right on that. Because if the communist Chinese economy really goes into a recession, or even worse, a depression, then the communist Chinese party, there's a single party country. When you have millions of people on the street because they don't have a job, then dissent goes up, resistance goes up, and that's the one thing the Communist Party and the people that run it that are afraid of. They are afraid of the people uniting and resisting their rule. Now, I don't think we're anywhere near that, but what's happening in Hong Kong? We've had 10 weeks of protests, and what the Hong Kong citizens are saying, we're not going to be extradited to a court in Communist China when we've committed a serious crime. We see all these protests, but why are they so adamant? For the simple reason, if you let the communist Chinese get away with it on this, then you can kiss your freedom goodbye. Now, I'm not recommending we get involved in Hong Kong's affairs, communist Chinese affairs at all, but communist China has a real problem. And if you combine that with a recession, a worsening recession in communist China, Hong Kong might be the least of the worries of the communist regime. The problem with the communist regime, it's closed. Most nations are ruled by an oligarch. Now, you get different opinions as to how large the communist oligarchy is. I think it's several thousand people. What I'm talking about, who are the real decision makers? Who has the power? It's a small group, and they do rule with an iron hand. It is an authoritarian regime. But up to now, the economy is being growing. They've grown at the expense of the United States and the American worker. But now that is coming home, because where you have factories that have closed, you have people that are looking for jobs and are having problems finding it. Remember, they have a population of over 1,400 million. We have a population right around 330 million. So you can do the math. It's over four times our population. The headlines are Trump has caved to tariffs. Well, not really. Only on imposing an additional 10% on certain goods. Where if he did, it would be largely the American people. I'm not saying 100%, but that would not sit well with the American voters. And quite frankly, I think Trump would not later on impose a 10%. He could, but it would be foolish. Why? What's happening the first Tuesday in November next year? Oh, we have an election. Do you think Trump, right before the election, is going to announce, now we're going to put a 10% tariff on toys, cell phones, laptops? No, he's not. Trump made, I think, a smart decision to do this. The only question is, what is going to be the communist Chinese response? Are they going to be coming in September and finally get down to agreeing to the language that needs to be agreed to for the United States to sign a trade agreement? I'm not sure. I think they've gotten away with murder for over 20 years, and they don't like giving that up. And I think some of them are thinking, wait Trump out, he'll be gone in 2021. Well, I don't think he's going to be gone, first of all. And I think his position could get stronger. Remember, on the international scene, one of the stronger economies today is the United States. Germany, many countries in Europe, and communist China, and to a certain extent Japan, are in a recession. So the United States is now in the driver's position, because these nations need the United States as a market. The United States doesn't need, I won't say no nation. We have a huge market. And at one time, exports were not as big as they are now, but even still, we're a lot less than, for example, Germany or communist China. So I'll congratulate Trump for doing this. I think it was a smart move, but I think all along that's what they were going to do. There's a certain amount of bluff here. I would be surprised if Trump put a 10%, forget about 25%, on all of these goods. Why? Go into Walmart or Costco and then look, where are these goods made? Now, they're not all made in China. Keep that in mind. Some are made in South Korea. Some are made in Japan. But and in terms of footwear and clothing, China, in some, to a certain extent, is more expensive than other nations like Vietnam or Pakistan. If you want to get a complete list, I didn't have time to dig it out. They have a website and it lists all the items that are excluded from the tariff. And like I said, once this announcement spread in Wall Street, we had a terrific rally. Why? It looks like we're moving towards maybe some agreement with communist China. Now, some are saying, well, he blinked. This is a major concession. No, it's not. We didn't want to have our U.S. citizens, consumers, pay the tariffs on these goods. And we know that there are a lot of other countries that produce these goods. And that means communist China has to be competitive with them. Now, what's the second story? And it's really an update. I was driving in and learned that starting Thursday, normal flight operations are going to begin again at the Hong Kong airport. Well, let's see if that happens. What I don't think you're understanding, though, and unless you really go to YouTube and watch several of these protest videos, and I had that on the last show. I didn't put them here, but I just want you to note. The protests have been all over Hong Kong, not just at the airport. Most of it has been on streets, certain areas. So I won't be surprised if the protesters say, well, we'll leave the airport alone for a while. Because you are inconveniencing travelers. That's why I think communist China didn't like the fact that they were. Now, initially, it's a good idea. Because who flies in to Hong Kong? Chinese citizens. To go shopping or business, whatever. But it's the airport for Hong Kong. And so you have many of the travelers are from mainland China, but the rest are from around the world. And you are inconveniencing them. And yes, the protests got a little bit out of hand, partly because of the police. There's blame on both sides. So maybe cooler heads are prevailing, at least for now, or we'll go back to the streets and target certain government buildings. And I think that's what they're going to do. I don't think the protests have given up, because why I don't regularly cover this story, we're going into the 11th week. In other words, this has not been settled. And the shoe that I think the Hong Kong citizens of Hong Kong, are watching is, what are the communists going to do? They've clearly massed a large military force on the borders of Hong Kong, and they might very well intervene in Hong Kong. That's not going to sit well. If anything would mobilize the people, that would. And you'll have more and more people come out. And should the communist Chinese, the People's Liberation Army, open up on the citizens of Hong Kong, then I don't know where this ends. And I think a lot of people that can in Hong Kong, if they haven't already, will flee the country. See, eventually the communist Chinese are going to take over Hong Kong. The question is when and how. When, I think they want to start right now. How is slow, gradual pressure where over time you wake up one day and realize the freedom and liberty that you had in Hong Kong previously, you no longer have. And that's why I think the Hong Kong citizens are watching this very, very closely. And those that are in a position that, for example, have not been able to get out of the country will try to get out of the country. They don't want a police state, an authoritarian, totalitarian regime that you have on the mainland. That's why they don't want to be sent to courts and prisons in communist China when they commit serious crimes, such as a felony murder, for example. And that's what this debate has been about. It could have been about a lot of other things, but this is the, I won't say the first time, but the most noticeable where the citizens of Hong Kong woke up into the fact that they don't want this. They want the rule of law. They believe in one country, two systems, but this sounds like one country, one system. Not overnight, but 10 years, 20 years, they can wait, and that's the danger. Now, I'm sure there are people in mainland China and in Hong Kong are hoping that at some date in the future that the Communist Party is not the only party that runs for elections. Now, the Communist Party controls the country, and it's a small group of people. It's a minority. But if their economy goes into a serious recession or depression, then you're going to have dissent and you're going to have rebellion in certain parts, the hardest hit parts of China. So that's why I put this in. I'll follow it to see what's going on. And if it gets serious or the size of the protests get quite large or the People's Liberation Army crosses the border, I'll let you know. So that was really a follow-up of yesterday. We didn't have a show yesterday. I mean, a follow-up on Monday. And before I forget, the way you listen to the Prompt Pop Show is go to my companion blog, which is promptpops.wordpress.com. That's promptpops, promptpops.wordpress.com. And if you do, you see links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows at the very top. But under that, you'll have some of the information, show prep, that I looked at, read, in preparing the show. I have a lot of material. I want you to make up your own mind. I'm giving you my opinion, my take or takeaway, but people don't agree with me, and I'm not expecting you to agree with me, but do your homework, especially if you don't agree with me, do some homework. You might find out I'm right, or you might get enlightened by some of the YouTube videos I present. Now today, if you were listening to the news, you would think we're about ready to go into a serious recession. Any day now. No, the U.S. economy is growing. Let me rest assured that the U.S. economy is not contracting. It's growing. But why all the panic? Why all the panic? And you saw it in media. I knew what an inverted yield curve is. I doubt 1 out of 100 listeners, unless you work on Wall Street, know what they're talking about. And they'll say, well, there's been an inversion of the yield curve. Why is that important? Well, when the yield curve inverts, not always, but a lot of times, what happens 12 months, 18 months, 24 months later? We're in a recession, like it's automatic. No, it's not automatic. That's why you can't conclude that if you see an inverted yield curve, and we've had an inverted yield curve, actually, for most of this year. Truth be known. First, yield curves, there are three types. The usual shape of the yield curve, it's upward sloping yield curves. Think about it. You have some money and you want to invest it. If you invest it short term, in other words, you want something safe short term, what most people do would buy treasury bills, 90-day treasury bills. But what's the disadvantage? Usually, what's the disadvantage? They pay the lowest interest rate, period. Now, if you want to get a higher interest rate or yield, you could invest in five-year notes. I'm just talking treasury securities, but it's not just government or treasury securities. It's all types of bonds. The point is this, if you invest your money in a bond that, let's say, matures in 5 years, you normally would expect to get a higher interest rate or yield than on a short-term rate. In other words, you're rewarded by the issuer of the bond, or the note in this case, with a higher interest rate. And that's because they're trying to attract you to invest your money there. Conversely, if you want a much higher interest rate, typically you would have to go a longer term, a 10-year, 20-year, or 30-year bond. You have a whole range of maturities. So the general slope of that curve, and it changes every day, is upward sloping. That's the key point. And that's the normal situation. Now, over time, as things change, that yield curve, instead of being upward sloping, can start to flatten out. And in an extreme situation, it can invert where you get a higher interest rate for short-term treasury bills, for example, or notes, a 2-year note, a higher interest rate than on a 10-year or 20-year bond. Now, why would that happen? Well, uncertainty. You don't know what's going to be happening. You don't want to lock your money up for 10 years. Why? We might be going into a recession. So when you see an inverted yield curve, people are saying, well, that's a leading indicator. Note, I didn't say a concurrent, a leading indicator. It gives you an indication that maybe the U.S. economy is going into a recession. But what influences the yield curve? Obviously, how business is going. If business is roaring, you're going to have to pay a higher interest rate. It'd be a normal curve. Conversely, if people think we're going into a recession, people don't want to lend long term. So what happens is you can get in a situation where the short term part of the curve is actually the interest rates are higher. Now, what has the Fed been doing, and what has President Trump been complaining about? President Trump has been complaining big time that Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, increased the federal funds target rate. And the federal funds rate, you can't get the federal funds rate. The federal funds rate is the interest rates banks charge other banks for their excess reserves. All banks have to have reserves, and there's a percentage of them, depending on the type of deposit. So to meet their statutory requirements in terms of reserves, if they're short, they borrow from other banks. Conversely, when they have excess reserves, they lend them to other banks. But it's an overnight money. It's 24-hour money. There's no collateral, but in 24 hours, you got to pay it back. Now, when the Fed thinks that the economy is heating up and there's inflation in the economy, what does it do? It has what I call a contractionary monetary policy. In other words, it raises short-term interest rate. And that's what they did last year several times. Trump says, in his opinion, they went too far, too many times. Now, because I've followed this prior to Trump, I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve. Let me reveal that. If it were up to me, I would do away with the Federal Reserve. I know why we have a Federal Reserve: to bail out the banks and bail out the federal government, to facilitate our national debt of over $23 trillion. Now, the why I cynically say this, for example, countries, how do they finance wars? They go into debt. They borrow, borrow, borrow. And unfortunately, if you invest in the country that loses the war, you lose all your money. But that's how the United States has financed its wars. It borrowed money, borrow, borrow, borrow. And given the fact we've intervened in country after country after country, we've had to borrow a lot of money, a lot of money. So as long as we have people around the world that still perceive U.S. Treasury securities, no matter it's short-term, medium-term, or long-term, in other words, it's bills, notes, bonds, as long as there are people willing to invest and get the return that the auction comes up with, these are auctioned off, all is well. But what happens when an auction fails? In other words, suddenly there's not a lot of people that want to buy it. Why would there not be a lot of people not want to buy it? Because the risk premium, or the yield is another way to say it, the interest rate is too low. If people are going to take risk, in other words, invest in your security, they want to be appropriately rewarded. It's a risk-reward trade-off. So with an inverted yield curve, it is the short end that is rewarded more than the longer term. And usually that happens when businesses, consumers, become a little cautious and they think that maybe the economy could go in a recession. Now, right now, I don't see it. 12 months from now, maybe. But Between now and 12 months, that's an eternity. And in 15 months, we have an election. What President Trump has been trying to do is convince the Fed that it should reduce the federal funds rate. They did that in July by 25 basis points. He thinks, and a lot of other people agree with him, that the Fed will reduce the federal funds rate at least another 25, if not 50 basis points, 0.25% or 0.5%. And I'm of that opinion that the Fed should reduce its federal funds rate. But the Fed is very much data-driven. They want to see, and they want more data. They always want more data. It's like, you know, Jeffrey Epstein wanted more and more sex. The Fed wants more and more data. And what am I talking about? Two key bits of data, and the more the better, is the end of this, well, the third week, and we're close to it. We're a little, not quite, I think 10 days away from it. What happens, we get the second estimate of real gross domestic product for the second quarter of this year. Why that's important, that has a lot more information. So the question is, where is that number going to be? It could go higher, it could go lower, or it could be exactly where it is. That's important. They also, in early September, will get the unemployment statistics. In my mind, there are several things they look at. One is, what is the economy doing? What is the real growth rate in GDP? So if they see the growth rate going down, in other words, not at 3%, let's say at 2.5% or 2%, I think you can, I won't say take it to the bank, nothing is certain, but they would most likely revert not to a tight monetary policy, but an easy, or what they call now an accommodative monetary policy. In other words, they'll lower the interest rate. Trump, like many, many presidents, wants lower interest rates, especially if what he's seeing could lead, and it could very well lead to a recession. How could that happen? Well, what if the Fed doesn't lower the interest rate? What if they make a mistake, and they make mistakes all the time, they increase it? Now, I don't think they will. And remember, you have a board of governors, so it's a vote. Ideally, the chairman likes to have a majority vote, but last time there were two that didn't want to make a change. And I can understand that point of view, because you would want the second estimate, in my estimation. Some would even argue the third, but I think the second is solid enough. The problem with the advance or preliminary estimate, it doesn't have all the data in it. Keep that in mind. And ideally, what you would want is the third quarter information. In other words, July, August, and September. You won't get, first time you'll see that advance estimate is in October, and the second estimate in November. And some people would say, let's see what's going on. Let's not jump either way. It's not as simple as I'm making it out, and you have a diversion of opinion. And like I said, I'm not a fan of the Fed. Why they make mistakes? What's the biggest mistake they've made? They started up in the law that created the Federal Reserve System passed in 1913. The Federal Reserve started in 1914. They've been in existence going on 105 years. What has happened in 105 years? What is the major responsibility of the Federal Reserve and any central bank? It's price stability. In other words, you want as little inflation as possible. Ideally, price stability. Why is that important? That means your money retains its value. Well, what has happened to that $1914 dollar today over the 105-year period? Oh, we've had a lot of inflation over that 105 years. So much inflation that one $1914 dollar today is less than 2 cents. In other words, if you evaluate a central bank by its number one objective is price stability, the United States Central Bank, the Federal Reserve System, is a failure, an utter, complete failure. Am I surprised? No, they don't consider themselves failure. Neither does the government. Why? What does the Federal Reserve do? It makes it possible for the United States government to borrow, I won't say unlimited amounts, but near unlimited amounts of money at the lowest possible interest rate. That's what they do for the government. And in exchange, what do? They bail out the banks. Yes, they're a lender of last resort. So I'm not a fan, because if you read the economic history on this, they just keep making mistakes after mistakes after mistakes. You're better off having a rule I'm not going to go there. Why do they keep making mistakes? They're a committee trying to replicate the market for money and credit, and they simply don't have enough wisdom, knowledge to do that. Markets are decentralized, and where they work, if there's not government intervention, they do a very, very good job. What the Fed is trying to do is determine the price of credit and money, and they make mistakes, and that's a judgment call. So we have gotten an alert, think of it as an alert, a warning that we might be going into a recession in 12 to 24 months. Well, that sounds good, but what have I been talking about? The Fed, assuming they haven't fallen asleep, in my mind, and a lot of people that watch this, most likely is going to do what? They're going to cut the federal funds rate probably one or two times, I would say anywhere from 50 basis points to 100 basis points. So it depends on all that data and what comes out. That's why it's difficult to predict. But don't let the news readers, the propagandists on your television network panic you, because most of them don't understand, won't have a clue what an inverted yield curve is and the background and why the Fed is important and on and on and on. Should you be paying attention to it? Yes. Because guess what? There have been several times where it's happened. And yes, we went into a recession. But now it depends on what the Fed does. Let me tell you what it really depends on. Trump is trying to push the blame on the Federal Reserve. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know what I'm going to say. What is the number one economic problem in the United States today? Government spending at all levels, but in particular the federal level, is out of control. We're borrowing money, and it cannot be sustained. Eventually, there is a day of reckoning, and it's not too far away. Sometime in the 2020s. And depending on how the economy does, what policies are pursued, who gets elected president, who gets elected for representative seats, Senate seats, what party controls. You see, there are a lot of variables here. And I've given up on both political parties because they're not addressing this problem. They're into the blame game. Don't blame me, it's the other party. Well, look at the history, the economic history since World War II. And for roughly the first 25 years, the U.S. economy was growing. Things were good. But over time, what has happened? The growth rate of the economy is slowed down. Why? In my mind, it's because more and more of the economic resources are not in the private sector. They're in the public sector, in other words, government. And like I said, it's not just the federal government. We have been borrowing money and spending that money, and we're borrowing it for people that are not even born yet. In other words, our government has been behaving irresponsibly, and it will stop. We are becoming Argentina and Greece. I would say fast becoming. And we got to be very, very careful because if the economy goes into a recession, what immediately happens? Oh, yes, people stop spending their money, but when they're not working because they're unemployed, government revenue goes down. And what shoots up? The government has to borrow more and more money to pay its bills. Think about that. So it's in the interest of the government and the Federal Reserve to make sure that the United States doesn't go into recession. But it has been the Federal Reserve and the federal government that has put us there through economic policies that simply were wrong. Not only do you have to understand what I'm talking about, you got to make the right decisions in a timely manner. I'm not saying this is easy, folks. And it's very tempting, and I'm not surprised, Trump blamed Powell for increasing that federal funds rate too many times too fast. Most presidents want an easy money policy. In other words, they want falling federal funds rate, target rate. What do I think is going to happen? The Federal Reserve will probably decrease the federal funds rate, like I said, between 50 and 100 basis points. And that will probably take at least two, if not four, times. So I think they'll do it in September. And I think they'll do it again in December. And then when we get the results for the fourth quarter in January, February, they might do it again. Now, what happened when the yield curve inverted? Yes, the stock market plummeted and the yields fell. In other words, people were fearing a recession. They were panicking. And yes, the past five inverted yield curves have all preceded a recession. I would expect nothing less, nor am I surprised that Trump is blaming this on Powell. And Powell's shares, or Powell and the Board of Governors share a certain amount of responsibility. They got it wrong. They made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. The question is, do you correct them and how fast you correct them? Because mistakes, especially if you're pig-headed, stubborn, persistent, can put and have put the U.S. economy into a recession. Now, there's a lot of information on what I've been talking about is called the term structure of interest rates and the shape of that term structure of interest rates, whether it's upward sloping, flat, or inverted. And what does that mean in terms of the economy? Don't panic. Why am I saying that? Oh, you're going to hear about this, I think, several more times, especially between now and election day. This was just an alarm, a false alarm, but an alarm. The takeaway is this. The United States economy is still growing, growing. Note, I didn't say contracting, contracting. You're not hearing of massive layoffs. We're not in a recession. But let me quickly say, because you have people on the other side, well, the U.S. economy is booming. No, the U.S. economy is not booming. I wish it were. It's not. You got to pay attention, and you got to connect the dots. First, you have to understand what's going on, and then what needs to be done, if anything. Sometimes the best thing to do is just wait. See, my complaint with the Federal Reserve several years ago, it should have been increasing it and wasn't, because the governors, many appointed by Obama, wanted an easy monetary policy. They kept the zero interest rate policy on for too long, way too long. And now they're trying to catch up. See, that's part of the problem. They're either going too fast, too slow. They never seem to get it right. And that's why do away with, and see, in my mind, the Federal Reserve is an example of what you get in a command and control economy where you have to determine the price of everything. Here, it's just the price of money or the price of credit. That's why I would do away with it. Is that going to happen? No. No, it's not. Why? Banks are powerful and the government is powerful. In other words, it's in the interest of the government to have an institution that goes along with it and makes it, it enables the politicians, whether the Democrat or Republican, to borrow money, to spend that money. See, that's the deal. We'll lend you the money provided you let us to have this federal banking system, the central bank. Enough said. I'm going to move along because I'm afraid I'm going to lose you. And this subject loses a lot of people quick. I know that. Because really, to do justice, you got to explain a lot of things in detail. And this is not a financial market or institution course. It's not an economic course. This is about current events and what you need to be paying attention to. And you better be paying attention to the fact that our national debt and government spending are out of control, and that will have consequences, and our unfunded liabilities are 10 times worse. That should get your attention. Are the powers that be really doing anything about it? The answer, unfortunately, is no. The biggest deficit in Washington, D.C. is leadership, period. Don't blame me. Blame the other guy. And Democrats and Republicans are responsible for the financial mess we're in. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I am going to play some of the President Trump's speech on energy. He went to Pennsylvania to tour a petrochemical complex there. Shell is the company. And normally, I wasn't going to play another Trump speech, but I got sucked in. I said, well, it's on energy. Maybe he has something new on energy. Well, not really. So I'm not going to play a lot of it. I will play the beginning, though. It's always fun to listen to what he has to say. And I do have the entire speech as well as the text. So at your leisure, if you want to be entertained, you can go and spend some time at it. Now, I've heard him a number of times and comment on it, and I didn't see that much new. Here is President Trump today in Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Gretchen. It's great to be back in the incredible Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Great place. And this is my 13th visit to Pennsylvania during my administration, which is more than any other president to this point in the term, and I really love Pennsylvania. I went to school in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, so we love this state. And I love the unions, and I love the workers, and you know, when I built buildings in New York, I built them exclusively with union. People don't understand that. I was exclusive. And in the last really great election, our election of 2016, you know, we did great with the union workers, great. But we didn't do good with the leadership. The leadership said, well, we've always gone Democrat. Let's keep going that way. That didn't work out too well for some of them, I want to tell you. I'll tell you, and as Gretchen said, this would have never happened without me and us. This would have never happened. So I'm with you. I'm with you. Remember that, and remember that Pennsylvania. You know, Pennsylvania has the best numbers they've ever had in the history of the state, and that's for a very good reason. And you know what that reason is? Hello, here I am. And I'm truly honored to be here with the amazing energy workers and construction workers. These are talented people. The craft workers who make America run and who make America proud. We're proud again. We're proud again. And no one in the world does it better than you. Nobody. Nobody does it better. There's nobody in the world that does it. And we're unleashing that power again, like we've never seen before, I will say. And we are doing well, and we're fighting against a lot of countries that have taken advantage of us for many, many years, but they're not doing it so much anymore. And in a little period of time, they won't be doing it at all anymore. They have taken advantage of this country. Today, we celebrate the revolution in American energy that's helping make our economy the envy of the world. This Shell petrochemical plant in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. I did very well here. We did very well. How many points did we win by? Does anybody know? I'll tell you. Isn't it, I think, 28 points? That's a lot. That's against a Democrat. Or whatever. It's one of the single biggest construction projects in the nation, and it made it possible and was possible by clean, affordable, all-American natural gas. Powerful, clean, natural gas. And when the wind stops blowing, it doesn't make any difference, does it? Unlike those big windmills that destroy everybody's property values, kill all the birds. Someday the environmentalists are going to tell us what's going on with that. And then all of a sudden it stops. The wind and the televisions go off. And your wives and husbands say, darling, I want to watch Donald Trump on television tonight. But the wind stopped blowing and I can't watch. There's no electricity in the house, darling. No, we love natural gas and we love a lot of other things too. Each of you is taking part in the largest investment in Pennsylvania history. It's the largest investment in the history of Pennsylvania, in the history of our country, the money that's being invested in your state right now. With your help, we're not only unleashing American energy, we're restoring the glory of American manufacturing, and we are reclaiming our noble heritage as a nation of builders again. Nation of builders. I was a good builder. I built good. I loved building. In fact, I'm going to take a tour of the site. They said, sir, we were going to do it before the speech, but we're waiting for it to stop raining. I said, don't worry about the rain. Do we have umbrellas? Don't worry about the rain. Umbrellas work very well, especially when they're made in America. So I don't care, but we're going to take a tour afterwards. I'm going to speak to some of your union leaders to say, I hope you're going to support Trump, okay?
And if now, let me interrupt. It's almost imperative for Donald Trump to carry Pennsylvania. That's why he's repeatedly goes back there. He has to win the electoral vote of Pennsylvania. But he also needs to capture Democratic voters that historically have voted Democrat. And the unions are big Democratic voters. But he's aiming the speech at the members, not the leaders, because he knows the leaders are more or less in the pocket of the Democratic Party, vice versa, too. So his appeal has to be to the American worker, and it's incumbent on him to win in Pennsylvania.
They don't vote them the hell out of office because they're not doing their job. It's true. Vote them out of office. When completed, this facility will transform abundant natural gas, and we have a lot of it, fracked from Pennsylvania wells, which they never would have allowed you to take if I weren't president. If my opponent won, this would be a lot of nice new structures outside. I guess you would have stopped long ago. You would have stopped construction before it started too much. But I was talking to Gretchen. They would have never gotten the approvals to do what's needed to fuel these plants. That wouldn't have been good. So probably they wouldn't have started. But if they would have started, it would have been stopped. But they put it into plastic through a process known as cracking. That raw material will then be shipped all over the country and all over the world to be fashioned into more products stamped with that very beautiful phrase, made in the USA, right? Made in the USA. Beautiful. That is a beautiful phrase. Getting this massive job done right has required more than 1,500 pieces of heavy equipment, one of the largest cranes anywhere in the world. I look forward to seeing it. I love cranes. I love trucks of all types. Even when I was a little boy at 4 years old, my mother would say, "You love trucks." I do. I always loved trucks. I still do. Nothing changes. Sometimes, you know, you might become president, but nothing changes. I still love trucks. Especially when I look at the largest crane in the world. That's very cool. Do you think I'll get to operate it? I don't know. We'll put the media on it, and I'll give them a little ride, right? And you have thousands of tons of concrete, aluminum, and steel, and nearly 6,000 of the strongest, toughest, and most talented workers anywhere on Earth. I know. It was the Trump administration that made it possible, no one else. Without us, you would never have been able to do this. I want to thank all of our great union members, the Boilermakers, carpenters, cement finishers, electricians, iron workers, laborers, millwrights, operators, plumbers, painters, steam fitters, I know them well. And a group that I've used more than anybody that's ever run for office, times a thousand. Because in New York City, they would drive those cement trucks up to my building. And those trucks were always on time, and sometimes they were lined up for six blocks when I was doing different things. Even when I was doing the Wallman Rink, the city couldn't build it. It took them 9 years. They had no idea what they were doing. And I had that whole big, about 70,000 feet. It's like a massive office floor, bigger than an office floor. We did it all in one day, and the trucks were lined up from Central Park all the way back into Harlem. And they did it all in one day, that pour. It was called a contiguous pour. The city used to build little pieces, a little piece here, a little piece there, a little piece here, a little piece there. A few years later, a little piece here. Then they had pipes underneath, and the pipes were made out of copper. And during the evening, things would happen, like the copper would be stolen because it was very valuable. So they'd have a little piece with copper, and then the rest of the pipe they'd lay, and they'd get ready to pour, and they'd leave, and everybody would steal the copper. So they'd start. This took place for, I guess, from 7 to 9 years. Nobody actually knows. Nobody wants to talk about it. But those trucks were operated incredibly well. And I never missed a delivery, and it's called the Teamsters. I also want to thank Bechtel, a real incredible company. We talk about the great builders of the world. President Jack Future. Where is he? Where is he? Jack. Where is Jack? Jack. What a great job you've done, Jack. Some big ones. Think of it this way, Jack. If we don't win, you won't be doing anything in this country. And you know, the world follows us. You see that? The world follows us. And it won't be so good. But you and I are friends, and you're going to have a lot of work to do, I think, Jack. A lot of work. Thank you, Jack. Great job. Jack has done an incredible job. That's an incredible company. Incredible. They're incredible builders. And the Secretary Treasurer of North America's Building Trades Unions, Brent Booker. Where's Brent? Brent, thank you. Great job. Young guy. You're so young, Brent. How the hell did you get that job? Man. We're honored to be joined by two leaders who truly have the backs of American workers. They become friends of mine. They do such an incredible job. They break up the roadblocks. We have a lot of roadblocks in this country where you have a little clause can stop a project. Little clause can stop it for years. And we break up those little clauses. We break them up fast. Energy Secretary Rick Perry. Where's Rick? Rick, thank you, Rick. What a great guy. I had to compete with him. You know, he wanted to be president. He was tough. He was nasty, man. He was nasty. But then he said, I want to do something great. And you have been incredible. He ran Texas for like 14 years, and he did it well. And now he's running a little thing called energy, and nobody's ever done it better. Thank you, Rick, very much. Great job. And a man who has been incredible in every way, you know, EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, you've heard a lot of horror stories where nothing can get done, nothing gets passed. It takes years and years and years to get a simple permit. It can take 20, 21 years to get a road before they reject it. How about this? They go 20 years, 21 years in certain cases for a highway or a road, not even a highway. At the end of the 21st year, they vote to reject it. How would you like to be? You're a young person, you're starting out, and you're all excited about this project. And it starts off as being a simple straight road. And then it ends up being a total catastrophe because of nesting and lots of other things that we can take care of. And it's 20 years later, and then they reject it. You've devoted half of your working life to a rejection. Happened to many people. And we have a man that knows how to break it up, but he's also a great lover of the environment. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler. He's done an incredible job. Andrew? Great job, Andrew. Great.
I'm going to leave it there. I played this because I was interested in seeing if there were any developments on the energy. But keep in mind what he's already done. He's deregulated the economy and get rid of these barriers, obstacles that make it difficult, if not impossible, to get various projects completed. So he's got the economy growing again. He dramatically decreased taxes, mainly for corporate taxes, but that gets passed on to you and me as well. And he's gone after regulations wherever they are, trying to reduce them. He's going after the union vote. He's going after a big part of the Democratic Party electorate. And the way he will get them to come out is if the economy continues to grow and grow and grow, despite the naysayers. It requires leadership. You need confidence. You need to know what you're trying to do and do it. And if he delivers the results, he'll get a second term. If he doesn't, if you look at what passes for his competition today, the United States is in trouble. Because the Democratic Party today has become the radical extremist Democrat socialist. They no longer believe, truly believe, if they ever believed, in competitive free enterprise market capitalism. So it's important to listen, not to every speech, and not from beginning to end, but get a sense of what Trump is trying to do and who is he targeting. He needs a message that resonates with the American worker and the American people. And to the extent that message accomplishes that, he will get a second term as President of the United States. Thank you. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.